Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, this is your boy, G-Ski Rocks. And this is going out to the lovely, lovely women of the world. I know sometimes you have to make a hard decision, but I want you to think about this.
Fridays. I am your host, the Visible One, and I have my two awesome co-hosts, and I'll let them introduce themselves.
Hey, this is Letitia Wong. Welcome to Pro Life Fridays.
And this is Melissa Palou. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
And today, we have an action-packed, informative, and probably, dare I say, potentially explosive show because of our guests that we are going to have today. So, with no further ado, welcome to Pro-Life Fridays. And before we go on, our opening scripture is, and I'm just going to paraphrase it today for the sake of time today, because we got some good stuff. So, Deuteronomy chapter 30, verse 19 says, I put before you this day life and death, and that you choose life. So, with that, and I just, like I said, I just paraphrased from Deuteronomy chapter 30, verse 19. And Miss Letitia has a short monologue today, but it is quite controversial. So, Letitia, take it away.
All right. Well, we've got so much news, but I picked out today that just, it didn't shock me, but I was a little surprised that somebody picked this up. It is
Hey, Letitia, hold on just a second. You have to get closer to the mic because you're really, really faded.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is that better? Sorry.
Yeah, we didn't hear anything.
Now,
okay, you gotta start over, girl. We didn't hear anything.
Sorry. Okay, so I want to talk about the defeat of PRENDA, which is the Prenatal Non-Discrimination Act that was just defeated in Congress yesterday. And now, you know, people going down through the list of who voted against it, because it was defeated, it's still by 30 votes. Now, I'm not going to get into the ins and outs of that, and neither am I going to talk about how effective I think that this bill would have been if passed, and then that's kind of beside the point. What I want to deal with is whether or not this should be a federal crime, and I say yes, it should. I say yes because of SCOTUS. The Supreme Court made abortion a federal issue, so now it has to be dealt with on a federal level. Ron Paul disagrees, and so he voted down PRENDA. And so here, let me take a moment to say that I am so glad that he is not the Republican nominee for president. Not that I'm over the moon with Romney either. So while it would be beneficial in many respects to overturn Roe and return the issue of abortion to the states, this issue by nature and circumstance is a federal issue. We've been down this road before with whether slavery was a states' rights issue. When the representatives from the slave states argued that legalized slavery was not a federal issue, and they had said that states' rights cannot be used to defend, states' rights cannot be used to defend and maintain a practice of pro-death and pro-inhumanity, which is injustice on the most fundamental level. Ron Paul's attitude toward this issue as a congressman is that it's none of his business, as he said so often, to either legalize or penalize anything in the abortion issue. Let me put it to you this way. Ron Paul is alive to be a congressman today because no one has the right to take his life away, either on the federal level or the state level. If everyone were to adopt his attitude toward the Constitution, then murder would not be a felony offense, and we would leave it up to the states to determine what constitutes murder. Then, you know, I would hope for my state that, hope for my sake that in my state, that it doesn't pass any laws permitting Asians or those who look Asian and their children to be killed as an exercise of someone's right not to have Asians living in the same neighborhood as they do. To leave the definition of what constitutes murder up to the states is the same thing as leaving up to the states whether or not slavery should be legalized. It is the most fundamental violation of rights, and it is a constitutional issue, and it is a federal issue. So I just think that Ron Paul is wrong on a very fundamental basis. And what has just been crazy is the backlash, I guess, for pointing out that Ron Paul voted against PRENDA by his supporters, just coming to his defense for the indefensible. Oh, it's none of the federal government's business. Oh, it isn't? It's not the federal government's business to make sure that a whole population in the United States is not enslaved to another population in the United States? That is a fundamental level, and that's what makes it a federal issue, because it is on this issue of life that all our other rights that are presupposed in the Constitution are built. It's just like, as the old saying goes, if you don't have the right to life, you don't have the right to anything. So I just wanted to point that out, because I really think that Ron Paul's stance, his attitude toward the Constitution, falls in a ditch. You either fall on one side or the other of having too much government or not enough. And we can't let the states simply regulate abortion by themselves without a fundamental stance. So this is SCOTUS' fault? Yes, he admits that. It is also now the federal government's fault for taking the same stance, because people's lives are in danger, and the unborn's lives are in danger. And that's the fundamental point. So let me go to our guest. Do we have our guest on? Hello? Hold on a second. I think I'm on the air, but I'm not sure anybody else is.
I'm here, Letitia, but I don't know.
Oh, good. Somebody was put on mute. Tay Thomas. Do we have our guest on? Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are going to have Connie Eller on, who we've had on before. She is one of the guests that we've had who has talked extensively about Ma'afa 21, Black genocide in 21st century America. And she is back with us, along with her partner in pro-life awesomeness, Zena Hackworth, and they are headed to the Missouri State Republican Convention. And these are two wonderful women who are going to give us their perspective, and hopefully we can get them on the air in just a moment. So while we are waiting in the wings for them,
hey, Letitia,
Thomas, do we have Connie?
Not yet. Connie hasn't called in yet. But do you remember the young lady, Lorna, who called into our show some weeks back and was talking, and we had a really good discussion?
Yes, I do.
I remember that.
Well, I'm going to have her share something. She just shared with me in a screening room, and I'm going to tell you something. What she's about to share is what makes what we do worthwhile.
Excellent.
Lorna,
okay.
Go ahead, share your story. Thanks for calling back.
Well, I'm calling back. Hello?
Hello, you're on the air,
welcome,
Lorna.
To the show. You're on the air.
Yes. Oh, okay, I'm sorry. I thought I heard someone speaking. I was calling in because a while back I called, and I was so pro-choice and also pro-life, but now I'm a little skeptical, and it's reason being because the latest report about this woman's this family situation in Argentina. She was told that her baby was stillborn, but in fact her baby was alive. And her baby was put into a morgue, and it was alive or whatever, but it was unattended for like 12 hours. And so when the mother went to see her child with her husband, like, they found out, like, oh, my baby is alive. Oh, no, there might be health issues and what have you. This has changed my stance as far as pro-choice. I now feel kind of skeptical when it comes to the procedures and the way in which they go about abortions and just, like, their overall care of stillbirth, abortions, fetus, embryos, and things like that, because it kind of gives me a daunting feeling that although we may think we have all the answers on how to, like, take a seed out of a person as far as the pills, the injections, the suction and all that, but, like, there's always that chance that you can, you know, leave the life in there and destroy it, you know, and that's unfair. And I think when it comes to tampering with someone's life, like taking away their ability to have a successful full life, it's unfair and it should be illegal. And until they find a successful way to have abortions, give abortions and birth control and things like that, I think it should be illegal.
Well, tell me exactly again what it is that you find about the story that you brought up. And I remember reading that story. How that caused you to think differently about babies in the womb?
Well, it made me feel different because now it's like I understand that it's not a 100% procedure. So if I today get impregnated and I say,
what is a 100% procedure?
the abortion procedures, as far as the pill.
Being successful, is that what you mean?
Yeah, like, if you take the day after pill, it's not saying, like, you're not going to be pregnant, and it might, you know, cause birth defects. And then, like, with the procedure itself, like, I forget one of them, but one of them, it sounds like, okay, it makes sense, it'll work. But if it doesn't work, you can have a deformed child. And I think that's unfair. And I think that should be illegal. All practices until there is a safe practice. You know what I mean?
Okay. So you're understanding that abortion, yes, is there are some people that survive abortion procedures. We've had guests on this show that have survived. They were supposed to be dead, but they survived. One in particular survived her abortion procedure. Are you now saying that individuals that are you now saying that abortion should be limited so that we know
not limited, but definitely, like, as far as humans go, like, no. Not until they can successfully, you know, abort an ape baby. You know what I mean? That's what I'm saying.
Lorna?
Okay, so let me get this straight. Hold on, Thomas. Let me get this straight. You want to make sure that abortion procedures are 100% successful at killing their victims before you want them legalized.
What do you mean, victims? What are you talking about?
Well, there is... The person that dies in the womb is the child. So you want to make sure.
Well, no, I'm talking about the fetus. Like,
yes.
The day after, for instance, that person that's developing the day after, like the process that happens after the sperm hits the egg, like once that happens, like
getting
rid of that.
I know what you're talking about. Basically, you don't think that, like, the morning after pill, or that should be an acceptable form of abortion. Let me say this, Lorna, because our guest, Connie Eller, is on the line, and she is someone who will actually be able to explain more in depth about, because let me tell you something. We have some guests today that if you listen to the at the end of this show, your stance will probably be completely, you know, but it's a start, you know, it is a start. And the truth of the matter is this, the fact that you was affected by that, what that says to me is that you're not as close-minded as some who were pro-choice. And let me tell you something. I applaud you for at least coming on to admit that. And having said that, you hang on the line. You hang on the line. I'm gonna leave you on the line, but I'm going to mute you. And I'm going to have we're going to bring our first guest on, Connie Eller. And Connie Eller, I don't know, have you seen the May Alpha 21 DVD?
No.
Well,
maybe we can bring Lorna on even at the end and maybe talk some more and see,
yeah,
you know,
where
she
is. Well, you know what? I'm also in the chat room.
Okay.
Oh, cool.
So, yeah. So we're going to put you on mute. We're going to leave you on where you'll be listening live. But so just hang in there, and we're going to bring you back on at the end, too, if you have any questions. So now... Man, this day is turning out to be a blessing, but let me introduce a young lady who is fast becoming one of my favorite people on this planet just because of her heart. The fact that she has, like many others, has prayed for me in times of sickness, but just her heart and her love for the unborn. Connie, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Thomas. I appreciate that so much. Oh, wait. You're not talking about me.
No? Well, you do. I tell you guys, I love you guys all the time, so get over it. But anyway.
Yeah, we're talking
you know?
About both of you.
Well, I always tell them I love them. So, Connie, introduce your friend.
I love all three of y'all, too.
Aw. Hugs.
Welcome back, Connie.
Thank you. And I am here with Zena Hackworth.
Yay.
Hi, Hackworth.
That's even better.
Hi, Zena.
Hello.
She's like, hello.
Zena gets stage fright. So But thank you so much for allowing us to be on again, and I appreciate you so much. And I caught some of what the young lady that your caller was saying, and I'd like to hear more. But, yeah, Zena and I, we do pro-life volunteering. We really need more people to get involved, helping to save the unborn. And when you save the unborn, you save their mamas and their daddies and their families and society.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Amen.
So, Connie, let me just ask you, let's go all the way back for a minute, because I want you and Zena's perspective on this, because I'm still scratching my head about this one. The meeting between the Congressional Black Caucus and the Congressional Pro-Choice Caucus, they met to blast pro-life people for successfully trying to cut down on the abortions in the black community. Could you guys help us wrap our head around the stupidity of that?
I'm going to tell you what. If it wasn't for four pro-lifers who went to this meeting that the Congressional Black Caucus members had, I don't know that anybody would even know what they're cooking up.
Right.
And if you just bear with me for a minute, because I actually printed out Jill Stanek's blog.
Uh-huh.
Jill Stanek is pro-life. I printed out her blog that tells us what went on in that meeting. And because I have lost my mind here, I'm looking for my copy. But basically what happened is the pro-choice caucus of the Congress, whoever they are, and the Congressional Black Caucus members got together and decided they were going to have a little conference on African-American attitudes towards abortion and what they call reproductive justice, okay?
Right.
And in that meeting, they had to admit that the wonderful pro-life billboards that are put up in different cities by black pro-lifers are actually successful, and they, the Congressional Black Caucus and the Pro-Choice Caucus, have now devised a plan, a wicked plan, an evil plan, to start making sure that we don't use the word eugenics or genocide in our discussion. They want to turn it more to the need for health care, need for food. How can they dare compare the need for food with killing our unborn children?
Right, right. And you know what? Let me stop you right there for a minute, because this is an epiphany that I actually had talking to Letitia and my friend Chaplain Aisha Kreutz up in New York. And they were talking about reproductive justice or reproductive rights, and I said to her, I said, wait a minute. To reproduce means you're having a baby. How can you call it reproductive rights if you're not reproducing and you're killing a baby? I mean, if we really thought about some of the terms that they used, we could totally flip them and flip everything they said on its tail. So could you guys kind of just speak to that fallacy for a moment?
Well, you hit it right on the button. As a matter of fact, they are having a big problem with the fact that we have turned it around to the truth and to the honest words. And so they're trying to twist it back like the Bible says. The Bible says that, in the last days, people are going to try to make the good sound bad and the bad sound good, and they're going to twist words. Well, that's what they do. I mean, let's be for real here. A place named Planned Parenthood, really? It's Planned Unparenthood.
Exactly. That's the ticket. Okay, I'm getting excited here. I'm glad I'm not the only one that caught that. And that really kind of stuck in my craw for years. It's like, Planned Parenthood? Aren't you unparenting the parent?
Thank you. Or some people call it Planned, K-L-A-N-N-E-D, Planned Parenthood.
That's a good point.
Okay.
That's a very good point.
So, yeah, I have Jill Stanek's article here, and maybe Zena can chime in as well. But the if you look up Jill Stanek, S like Sam, T-A-N-E-K, her blog, the name of it is Inside Congressional Caucus Briefing on How to Block Pro-Life Gains in the Black Community. Okay, people can read it and week for themselves. But pro-lifers got into that meeting, and, you know, they're losing. The abortion side is losing. In the meantime, they're still killing our babies, though, but they're losing. They're losing so badly that they're doing desperate things that don't even make any sense beyond how abortion doesn't make sense anyway.
Right. Connie, let me read something real quick. I want you and Zena to speak to this young lady for a minute. Her name is Lorna, and this is her stance. She states, again, I want to state my stance. She's pro-life until further research for secure means to abort undeveloped embryos. She's no longer pro-choice because it can cause harm to the development of the unaborted child. And then she says once abortion is 100% successful, then she will be pro-choice again. Could you guys both explain to her, because Zena, I know that you travel around with your organization and you talk to young ladies and teenage girls. Explain to her just kind of how that's kind of like light and dark at the same time. Just explain that to her and help her to understand that.
And I want to say I do appreciate the young lady calling in because, you see, we can't learn unless we ask questions. Now, I would start off by saying that every sperm and egg that makes a baby is making a baby. So it's not an undeveloped baby. It's a baby developing. And the only way for any abortion to be successful is that it successfully kills that child, okay? So, you know, the heartbeat system is starting at 21 days of pregnancy. A lot of us don't even know we're pregnant by then. I can tell you I have a thyroid gland problem, and when I read the science on it, the science article said that that gland starts to be formed at 7 weeks of your mother's pregnancy. 7 weeks of pregnancy, that baby's forming that thyroid gland. I'm 51, and that thyroid gland is still giving me problems, okay? So you are who you are from the moment of conception. So the only successful abortion is the one that kills babies, and in this country, 53 million successful abortions have happened, and 37% of them were black babies. Now, who wants successful abortions on any of our babies? Those who don't want us around.
Right.
Whether it's a botched abortion or a successful one, the intention is to intentionally, not accidentally, kill a developing human being who will never be created again in the history of man. Zena, what say you? Okay, Zena's freaking out over here.
I'm sorry.
Zena has a lot to say. She's just not used to saying it on the radio.
It's all good.
I love you, Zena.
Sure you do.
Zena's talked to people at like the GAP, the Genocide Awareness Project, where they put the big signs on campus that shows you what abortion does and compares it to the Holocaust and to lynching. Zena's actually talked to people there who were very angry at her. So, Zena, what reception did you get when people were angry at you, but you listened to them? What was the end result?
Well, the end result was, like the gentleman is doing here with the young lady who called in, he listened to what she had to say, and he didn't, from what I could hear, he didn't tear her down, didn't discredit anything that she said. Instead, he addressed it, and so that's what we did. We would address everyone's concerns, no matter how angry they became. We didn't become angry with them. And so at the very end, the words that I've got from so many of the people who did not agree with us was that even though I don't agree with you, I am glad you came, because they were able to have a civil conversation with us.
Right. So. Right. And that makes a whole lot of sense. I mean, for us, really, the truth of the matter is this, and I'm going to tell on myself a little bit for a minute, because sometimes And rightfully so, my two co-hosts, they get on me because sometimes I will get intense on the show. I won't cuss, but I'll say names, I'll call names and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, because of a civil conversation, and I've also had the other end of the spectrum where it got called all kinds of, you know, stuff on air. But at the end of the day, because Lorna called in, she was civil with her, you know, her what she had to say. It, you know, that's what this is about. That's what this is about. And I am hoping that through y'all's story, the young lady, Michelle, who's going to be talking in a bit, I definitely want you guys to hear her story as well. And Letitia's going to introduce her. Connie, ultimately, yes. And Zena, ultimately what it's about, it's not just about being on the air, but it's about actually being out there. Connie, that's what the Pro-Life Without Exception conference is about next year.
It's wonderful.
It's, oh man. So, Melissa,
can I read one more
question.
Thing?
Go ahead.
Sorry,
and Melissa's going to ask
something for you, for your listeners to look up. I'm just going to give you the title and the year that this was written, and let everybody really think about this, because abortion does so many different kinds of harm, and right now, this is a week or next week where people are going to start talking about breast cancer.
Right.
So can I just advise everybody to read this article from 1993, give it to you real quick?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yes, please.
It's called, this is the name of the article, scientific article, Breast Cancer Risk Factors in African American Women, the Howard University Tumor, T-U-M-O-R, Registry Experience, written in 1993, and the one paragraph summary says that an increased odds ratio was found for induced abortions, which was significant in women diagnosed after 50 years of age. Spontaneous abortions had a small but significant protective effect in the same subgroup of women. Birth control pill usage conferred a slightly increased risk. It is of note that abortions and oral contraceptive usage not yet studied in African Americans have been suggested as possibly contributing to the recent increase in breast cancer in young African American women. That was 1993. How come we don't hear about that?
Right. Right. And, you know, and I can verify that for a fact. My sister, who had an abortion, is going through chemotherapy for breast cancer. Not only did she have breast cancer, let's talk about the other type of cancer that was connected to women getting abortions, cervical cancer. She had cervical cancer as well.
I'm sorry to hear that. We'd be praying about that.
I really appreciate that. And it has affected her. Folks, this is why you want to talk about how abortion has decimated a family. Between seven cousins of mine and my sister and an aunt, I kid you not, I would say they probably had close to 15 abortions between all of them. And you know what it stemmed down to? There were no father figures in their life. None.
Yeah.
No positive males.
Right.
So
Zena
that's
just did that quite a bit.
Right. Can I make an appeal? This is Zena. Can I make an appeal to the people who are listening as well?
Yes,
there are
absolutely.
A number of women who have had abortions and they still call themselves pro-choice, but they are hurting
exactly.
women. So they are just on an agony on the inside, and they're trying to convince themselves that what they did was the right choice, and they're continually hurting. And when they run into other women who have had abortions as well and are contemplating abortions, they will counsel them to go ahead and do so. But I ran in, I was in New York last week, and I talked to a young woman whose sister was in a, getting wanted to have an abortion. And I asked the sister, I said, have you had one? And she told me yes, and I asked her what her experience was like, and she said it hurt me so much. She said, I still have nightmares. And I said, don't you love your sister enough to tell her? Well, I don't want to tell her what to do. I said, you don't have to tell her what to do, but tell her what your experience is. This way you can try to save her the pain. So if family members start, instead of taking their family members to abortion clinics, friends and family, instead of doing that, tell them what your experience was in order to help save that woman from the exact same pain that you have gone through. Because if you don't, then you'll have two hurting women, three hurting women, five hurting women instead of one you've learned from. So
right.
That's all.
Right. Thank you for sharing that. Because, and this is Melissa, you know, a lot of times when we do discuss this issue, because it's a very emotional issue, and we're obviously very pro-life, some people may think, you know, well, you're attacking women who have had abortions who are post-abortive or men who are post-abortive, and that's obviously not the case. We care
right.
about them, and we understand that they're hurting. When we're talking about this issue, we try to remain sensitive to that. But you're right, there are so many hurting people that we don't even know are dealing with this, and that may be fueling their defense of their pro-choice position even, you know. So it may not even be, you know, a sort of a logical thing that they've thought through, but just kind of an emotional response to deal with the pain of their own abortion. And
right.
I've encountered that quite a bit. Have you ladies?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, Jesus forgives and heals, and we do need to remind people of that. Jesus forgives and heals, and we need to let him. And that,
right.
you know, even this brokenness, this pain, this horrible sin that we've done, God can turn things around and still use it for his glory. And so I just want to say that to everyone out there, you know, let Jesus love you. He loves you. Let him do it. You know, there is healing and there is hope and there is a new life in Christ. And don't let this bog you down. Yeah, it's a horrible sin. We have killed a life and we should never rejoice over that. Now, turn
Connie,
it over
you
to God.
You yourself went through that abortion experience yourself, right?
Yeah, I was only 16, 17, didn't have to tell my parents. And, you know, I've told my story before that I believe it crushed who I was going to be. Yet, when I became a Christian at 19, God renewed me, remade me, and every day he's making me a little bit more new and teaching me some more stuff. And you know what? I said, I'm not going to be silent anymore. Why?
Amen.
If I can say something so somebody doesn't have to go through this pain, which is what you just said, then why don't I just say something? You know, maybe someone will listen. They won't go through this pain. And even that wonderful young lady who called in who had that question, we cannot, it's impossible for us to take a life, any life, and still be the same, and we cannot be whole after that. So regardless of what type of abortion, how quote-unquote successful it is, it's what's in our heart that says, I want to take a life. That's what needs the healing. We need to be 100% healed from that, from the willingness to take a life. Otherwise, when we take someone else's life, we're taking our own almost. It's just not right, you know. And I can go on and on about it, but I want to hear your next guest, too.
we want to hear more about you ladies in terms of your ministries and what you all are doing in the pro-life movement. Connie, I know through being a part of the Mayoffa 21 documentary, Black Genocide in the 21st Century, and then Zena, your organization as well. We wanted to hear kind of what you both are doing and up to in the pro-life movement.
Well, very, very quickly, I just do a network called Missouri Blacks for Life, but Zena does This Race Will Self-Destruct. I'll let her tell you in 15 seconds what it's about.
It's a pro-life.
Well, you don't have to rush, but we want to definitely hear what you have to say on that, what you're doing.
Pro-life workshop for teenage girls to attend with their mother. And we cover the basis of everything they want to know. We cover abortion, and we also cover HIV and AIDS. But we also open the floor for the girls to ask anything they want to when their mothers, with their mother's present. We give them the opportunity to write their questions down, but nobody ever wants to. And they're not afraid in a small group to ask questions, and they will ask you everything under the sun. But if they know that you are going to answer their questions, I'd rather them get the, just like their parents, we'd rather them get the answer from someone who knows rather than getting it from their peers or from someone at school who will tell them something that the parents don't want them to know. So that's pretty much what we do. And I also do this with my daughters. But I also volunteer. I'm a professional volunteer, pro-life volunteer. And we go around the country and we do different types of pro-life volunteering.
And if I can say also that another kind of pro-life volunteering is to get involved in politics, no matter what your political party is. We need people on the ground, grassroots, who will go to their political parties and say, look, you better be pro-life, become pro-life, or if you're claiming to be pro-life, really be pro-life. Talk to candidates, talk to other people. Try to get to your conventions, become delegates and alternates. It can be done by the grace of God. We are doing it as we speak.
Right, and also one of the things I encourage people to do is if you know a candidate or don't know a candidate, find out. Don't just read their literature. Find out how to meet with that person, whether it's at a convention, whether wherever they are, so that you can grill them on the questions, because not everyone's definition of pro-life is the same. So I like to know, what is your definition of pro-life? Because some people think that pro-life means, well, you know, I don't believe that you should abort a baby after 12 weeks of pregnancy, which is not my definition of pro-life. You know, in my case, my pro-life for me is life begins at the moment of conception. So, you know, we need to find out where these, you know, and ask key questions and listen to their answers, because we have three candidates here running for governor. Three of them say they're pro-life, but only one of them gave me the right answer when I asked the question, and that one's getting my vote.
Yes, Bill Randall's right.
I'm not going to say who.
You have to tell me, because I know.
You can't say that it's that person or the other person, but it's the third person.
Right.
Wow. You guys are
right.
Awesome.
Yeah, you are awesome. Let me introduce our next guest. And ladies, you should please stay on the line. Stay with us.
Yes.
My friend, my personal friend, and somebody I've grown very fond of is a sister in Christ and also a fellow apologist. Woohoo! My friend Michelle Ferdek is on the line with us, and she's going to talk a little bit about her personal journey from being a pro-choice individual to now being a pro-life individual, and how she came to go from one camp to another and how she changed her mind. So, Michelle, are you there?
I am. Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you. Thank you for joining us on the air on Pro-Life Fridays.
Welcome to the show, Michelle.
I kind of became pro-life the opposite way that I think you're supposed to. You know, I think most people think I became a Christian about 3 years ago. And before that, I would say I was probably agnostic. And I think the idea is that you sort of get baptized as a Christian, and then the next thing you do is you go and you register Republican, you know, and you become socially conservative, and that's just part of it. I actually became pro-life before I became a Christian. Just a little bit of backstory. I was brought up in a liberal church, but in a conservative town. So even though the official position of our church was pro-choice, in the end, it just was something that was never, ever talked about. So we didn't have Sanctity of Human Life Sunday sermons or anything like that. I pretty much became pro-choice through, you know, the culture. It's just, if you're, you know, a cool person and you're pro-choice, and if you're kind of a backwards hillbilly, then you're pro-life, and I wanted to be cool, so I was pro-choice. And I was also a very strong feminist. And so when it was sort of posed as, don't you support women's rights when you support abortion, I thought, well, then of course I support abortion, because I support women's rights. It's sort of bundled as one unit, right? And so I would say from my teen years through my mid-20s, I was definitely considered a pro-choice, but would have never had an abortion myself. I was probably in that category. I wouldn't do it myself, but I'm not going to tell other women what to do with their bodies, sort of deal. So that's how I started out. what happened was I got married, and we decided to start trying to have kids right away. And my first pregnancy, I miscarried. And then I got pregnant again right away. And, you know, I just started for the first time learning about the development of the unborn baby, you know, reading all the books you read when you're pregnant, watching that In the Womb show on National Geographic. So that was the first I had ever been educated about what life is like inside the womb. And when I had my baby, one night when she was a few days old, I was holding her, and it just, and I know this, I know now that this was from God, but at the time it was sort of an out-of-the-blue flash, but it was sort of, oh, my gosh, you know, if I would have miscarried her, I would have lost this baby, you know, this was her now, and it was her when she was 5 weeks after conception. You know, something clicked. If I would have miscarried, this baby would have died. This little soul would have been snuffed out. And I don't know why. I hadn't been listening to politics or anything. You know, it just came to me, and I kind of put the two together, that the life outside the womb was the same inside the womb. But I'm very stubborn, so I was still pro-choice for probably about a year. But, you know, this is a point of time in my life when I am the least religious I have probably ever been. I'm not going to church. I would not consider myself Christian. But I would say the science and also those motherly instincts together, and God working on my heart, even though I wouldn't have acknowledged that's who was doing it, just changed me, and I became pro-life.
Wow.
So nobody argued you into the pro-life position, or they beat you over the head with the Bible, or they screamed at you on the sidewalk?
You know, I probably, you know, don't throw tomatoes at me. I probably would have been the one that would have made fun of the pro-lifers. You know, I noticed I was starting to change when those "It's a Child, Not a Choice" bumper stickers didn't annoy me. I thought, you know, they kind of have a point. You know, I just slowly started to soften. But actually, I know the instant I really became pro-life. It was 2008, and we were talking politics. It was during the after the primaries, and Barack Obama was the candidate, and against John McCain, and we were talking politics with my husband's grandfather named Ray, and he was an 85-year-old Catholic, and he said, he didn't say anything the whole time we're talking about stuff, but then he just said very humbly and quietly, said, "All I care about in this election is that we stop killing those innocent little babies." And something in my heart just snapped in half. I mean, like,
wow.
My heart literally broke, and I just thought, oh my gosh, he's right. That's exactly what we've been doing.
Wow.
You know, and you know, just for anybody out there who's listening who's elderly, don't think you can't make a difference or that younger people don't listen to you. And I found out, he told me that he prays the rosary outside of abortion clinics. He recently passed away, but every Sunday or every Saturday, rain or shine, he was out there praying the rosary. You know, he had his wheelchair. He had signs propped up around him, and he gave me some. I asked if he had any literature on pro-life stuff, and he did. And I started. I just immediately wanted to get involved and do anything. I couldn't think of anything else. I know God was just like, get involved, do something with this. And I couldn't sleep at night. I was up at like applying to online crisis pregnancy centers to volunteer, and I was looking up stuff about politics, and. It was just instant. So,
wow.
A little bit different. You know, I wasn't a Christian though, so I had no community really outside of my husband's grandfather for this. So, but what happened was, you know, God used this. I know He wants me to help save babies and save the mom from the grief of abortion. So I'm not trying to downplay that, but I think the bigger picture was God was trying to bring me back to Him. And
yep.
And because I tried to find secular ways to help with pro-life stuff, and I couldn't. It was the Christians. Everywhere I looked, it was a Christian agency doing this stuff. And so I applied at the local – there was one right down the street from where I lived, and I applied as a volunteer for a crisis pregnancy center, and they were asking me all about my path to salvation and all these religious questions, and I was very honest. I said, I can't sign, like, a statement of faith. I said, I'm not a Christian, you know. I said, and it would be lying to you if I signed something like that, but I said, you can trust me. I'm not going to bash Christian belief, and I am 100% pro-life, no exceptions. So they kind of worked with me, but not officially. But it was working with those amazing Christian pro-lifers, and nobody else. There are now secular pro-life, and there's actually a website called Libertarians for Life. There's a pro-life gay and lesbian league. There are non-Christians doing it, but they're much smaller numbers, and they're not local. And just watching this amazing Christian witness of standing up for human rights, even though so many people are calling them names, and that was a huge testimony to me in my walk back to Christianity. So I'm kind of the backwards way of doing things. But it's really been an amazing journey. So
wow. Connie, Zena, you guys have any words of encouragement for this new warrior? Well, not so new warrior. She's been at it for 3 years now. But I mean, this is the kind of story I love hearing this. And once again, Missourian. Melissa, you and Devin need to pack up and move to Missouri because I have a strange feeling.
Can we
talk
with you?
Actually, Michelle's from Illinois.
Believe it or not.
Well, you're close enough to Missouri that there's so much happening right here. It just seems like, and especially, I got to give a shout out to St. Louis, because St. Louis, the St. Louis side of the river, you guys, you're rocking and rolling. And here in Kansas City, we're trying to get up to snuff. I just found out today that there are pro-life pastors here in Kansas City, but they're not as vocal. And for me, part of my responsibility with the Frederick Douglass Foundation of Missouri, we have to go find the folks. And it's like, that's the reason why. I don't know, Letitia, Connie, Zena, do you guys realize the impact, the potential in the pro-life Missouri is poised to take or poised to be a leader in the pro-life movement?
Absolutely. This is Connie. I think about it almost every day. And we Missouri has a great pro-life reputation, even in its legislature, even among Democrats. We have a great reputation. St. Louis does, as you said. And let me tell you, in Kansas City, you got a lot of pro-lifers. Karen Mitchell lives in the Kansas City area, and she is the founder of Black Americans for Life of Kansas City, and I believe she founded that about 30 years ago.
Huh. I did not know that.
So there, bam.
Okay. Well, I'm going to have to find these folks because, you know what, it's people like you, Zena, Michelle, Letitia, Melissa. I mean, I could tell you.
And yourself. And yourself.
Oh, guys, and let me tell you something. I deflect credit away from me because, and I'll tell you why I do that. Because it's a team effort, and that's the way I look at it. Me, oh my gosh, Letitia was telling me about Michelle last night, and I was like, yay, because, oh, man, this.
Michelle, what part of Illinois
about
are you in?
I live in Waterloo, Illinois, so I'm Southern.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, well, you're St. Louis, then. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I told you she was close to
Missouri. Downtown St. Louis.
Yeah, Waterloo is part of what we call the east side.
Oh, really?
That's right. So I'm still St. Louis, yeah, just across the river.
So you just on the other side of the Mississippi River, right?
That's right.
Or the Missouri River.
Well, you know what? God has his people planted everywhere. Let us never underestimate. I'm going to tell you a tiny little story here. I was at the March for Life in Washington, D.C. many years ago where there's hundreds of thousands of people. And these two teenagers came up to me, and I was really scared because, like, they had the earring and the eyebrow, and you know what I'm talking about. Okay,
right.
All these piercings and stuff, and it scared me half to death. So they were coming straight at me, and I was like, "What are they going to do to me?" And you know what they did? They pulled out a rose and gave it to me, and
aww,
they said, "Thank you for doing." So don't ever underestimate. God has his people planted everywhere.
Yeah.
Michelle's story is wonderful, you know what, let God do his thing. He is willing to bring people in, to give them forgiveness, to give them new life, and give them a mission. He has a plan for your life, and it's a good one. Jeremiah 29:11-14, okay? So I love the story. Be encouraged. Everybody out there, let God use you, okay? Let he will break down the obstacles, because you can save a life no matter what your age is. Doesn't matter your income, doesn't matter your race, your stature, your education. It doesn't matter. God wants to use you to help somebody else.
Right.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing, Michelle, as I was listening to your story. This is Melissa. You were saying how you kind of came in the back way or backwards. And I would say that you were on the path that God had for you, you know, and he's sovereign. And he knew what it would take for you to, you know, bow the knee to him. And you could just see through the testimony that you gave of just
right.
along the way how he was just revealing more and more of himself to you. I think it's such a neat story how God just deals with each of us so personably. And he knows exactly where we are. And he doesn't just leave us there either. You know, he guides us along the way. But the fact that you're now not only pro-life but active in the pro-life movement and an activist, to me that's huge. You know, have you gotten any types of reactions from people who knew you before about your pro-life activity now?
Mostly my mom, because she was the only person that had ever said out loud to me that she was pro-life, and I of course at the time was a teenager, and you know if your mom is pro-life, then of course you have to be pro-choice. You know, you can't agree with what your mom says when you're a teenager. So, you know, we had sort of these debates, and she always told me, she said, you're lucky I'm pro-life, because I was encouraged to abort you, and because she was just in a bad situation.
Wow.
She got me. And I, you know, just teenager kind of blow it off. So now she's like, Michelle, I can't believe after all the little smart-aleck comments you threw my way for being pro-life, that now you're pro-life and you're active. I don't, in terms of being active, I don't see how you can be pro-life and not be active. To me, it was
exactly
good point.
Exactly
good point.
You know, I mean, I think right now for me, because I have very young children and I'm homeschooling, I can't be as active as I would like to be. I would do this all day, 24/7, could, but and I know that God has different seasons in our life when we're more active outside the home and especially for women, but. I'm trying to be as active as I can, and I know,
right.
you know, once this phase of my life is over, or even as my girls get a little bit older, I'd like to include them with me, and we could do this work together. So,
right. And that's
yeah,
awesome.
I think you're right. I mean, it is an amount about the amount of activism necessarily, but as long as we're doing something active, you know, I think that would help. You know, if everyone's doing something, then we would really turn the face of this whole movement upside down. You know, if it wasn't just kind of a label that people kind of wear, you know, I'm pro-life and I vote pro-life and that's kind of it, you know. And now, actually, you know, a lot of people don't even vote pro-life in the Christian church, so that isn't even a label that they can wear either. So I think you're right, though. I mean, whatever season that God has you in, as long as you're doing something to protect human life is what's
right.
important.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't understand how you can say you're a follower of Jesus Christ and be for abortion. There, I said it, and I'm going to put that out there.
Yay.
I really don't understand that.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a lot of pastors and clergy out there preaching pro-life until their tongues fall out. And the people are looking at them with glazed eyes. And on the other hand, there are some congregations where the people are pro-life and they never get to hear their pastor say anything pro-life and they wish that he or she would. You know, people are people. And we got to pray for God to break some hearts and heal some hearts and open some mouths, because we can't afford to be silent anymore. How many more millions do we need to lose? Even one more baby, one more unborn baby, and one more mother's broken heart. That's just too many.
Right, exactly. And that is what that's what it's about. And Michelle, I wanted to share this with you, and because you had shared about your first miscarriage of your first baby, right? Well,
right.
I want to share this with you. Now, you know, and I think you know this, being a believer and getting to know Lord, the Lord God, that was not God's original design for you to miscarry your baby. But what he did, as the saying goes, and I'm still trying to debate if it's scripture or if it's something that somebody said because it sounded good, but what the devil intended for evil, God took and used it for his glory. And having said that, what I mean by that is this. It's because of the loss of that first baby that you developed, and you confirmed this in your testimony, that you did develop such a love for children and such a passion for the pro-life movement. So where the enemy intended to try to use that situation to throw you into a place of depression, God said, I don't think so. That's my daughter, and I'm using her for my glory, and that's the path that you are on, my friend. And I am honored and blessed, as we all are, I'm sure, Connie, Zena, Letitia, Melissa, all would agree with me in saying that we are honored and blessed for hearing your story.
Amen.
Well,
amen.
Thank you.
You're
and
welcome.
You mentioned that you can't be, you don't know how you can be a Christian and not be pro-life. And I would say, I don't know how you could be a mother. You know, if I lost my faith tomorrow and became an atheist, God forbid, I would still be just as actively pro-life. I mean, where's that mothering instinct? You know, when a man walks
away.
That's
a good point. Wow.
From a pregnant woman, we fillet him alive. And when a woman does it, we cheer her for celebrating her rights. I don't understand how separating women from their children is supposed to help women. I still have
That's
my feminist
good belief, point.
But not in that way. I just disagree with their solutions. But I'm still very interested in the cause of women. But I just think that this hurts way more than it helps. So
right.
If you're a mother or even a feminist, a real one, I don't see how you could be pro-choice.
Right.
I'm not afraid to say that.
And I agree with you. I agree with you 1,600% plus infinity. Anyway, but Michelle, can you stick on the line with our panel, right? Do you have to go, or can you stay
no,
on the
I'm
line
fine.
With us? Okay.
Sure.
Melissa, I think you have some questions for Connie and Zena.
Yeah, and Zena. Yeah, I wanted to talk specifically about the May Alpha 21 documentary. Some of our listeners may not have been on or have heard our interview with you before, when we did a two-part interview with you on the documentary. Can you just tell us about it and, you know, the story behind it and the information shared within that?
Oh, sure. Sure, thank you. Ma'afa 21, actually the full name of the documentary movie film is Ma'afa 21, Black Genocide in 21st Century America. The film came out in 2009. Has been out for 2 years, and you can actually watch the entire thing for free on the website now. They just started that a couple of months ago. So it's www.maaf, like Frank, A, the number 2, the number 1.com. You can watch the entire video. And the video connects the dots between slavery, racism, eugenics, population control, forced sterilization, some overseas humanitarian assistance, abortion, et cetera, and it will knock you off your seat. It is produced by Life Dynamics of Denton, Texas, by the way.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Melissa.
Yeah, tell us about some of the research involved in the documentary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, some of my involvement in it is that I'm a narrator for about 2 minutes. That's it. But they sent me some research before they started the filming, and it knocked me off my seat. the research involved, like, which companies profited off of the slave industry. Now, think about this. In order to run the slave industry, you had to have a whole lot of different companies and corporations and businesses going. You had to have newspapers, lawyers, bondsmen, shipping, legal industry in the sense of catching those who escaped from slavery, putting out bulletins asking for their arrest. Think about all of that, okay, the finance industry. Think about all of that. And that was some of the background research that they did to look at who profited off of slavery. The other research is when slavery was about to end in America. There were some people who were beginning to freak out over what they were going to do with all these black people that they didn't want anymore. So this is where things like eugenics came in. Eugenics is kind of like the practice of believing that, someone is of superior stock and other people are of so-called inferior stock, and perhaps we should get those who are so-called superior to continue to reproduce and have more of their kind. But those that we consider inferior or feeble-minded, we don't want their kind, so we need to get them to stop reproducing, okay? And that belief that, some people are genetically inferior, genetically superior, blah, 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 blah. And if you go through the whole film of Ma'afa 21, watch the whole thing in one sitting. You might miss a beat. It goes to a lot of transitions. So you have these different forms of racism, and eventually what it brings us up to today, you may say, well, those are old problems. That was slavery. That was then. We're not talking about now. Oh, yes, we are, okay? Because eventually this group and this woman named Margaret Sanger, who started this group called the Birth Control League and the Birth Control Review, was a friend of the American Eugenics, Society. Eventually, the Birth Control League became Planned Parenthood. Now, we were just talking about them earlier, how I call them Planned Unparenthood, okay? And it's impossible to sum up a two-hour film in a few minutes, so I just encourage everyone to see the film. And then, you know, if you have any questions, call Life Dynamics down in Denton, Texas. They can answer all of your questions. They did a lot of research, and even though 2 hours and 20 minutes is a long time for a film, Life Dynamics says that was only 20% of the research that they did. They also are in the process of scanning Margaret Sanger's books so you can read them for free on the Life Dynamics website, which is www.lifedynamics.org.
Right. Connie, let me ask you this. I've shared with you a little bit about the conference for next year. Because I asked you to be one of the speakers. But I was thinking today. Something that we're going to do to promote this, and okay. I am starting a project that essentially it's called Without Exceptions, and
yes.
the whole purpose of this project, and basically it's going to be a film along the lines of Ma'afa 21, except it's not going to be as long because it's going to point people to the upcoming conference next year, and it's going to be a promo for the conference because my heart is twofold: to one, destroy the line of division within the pro-life movement. You look at the left, look at the pro-aborts. They're unified in their message. They may have different people on their pro-abortion message, but ultimately when you look at it, they come back to one central theme, and that is a woman's right to choose. Whether someone's focused on eugenics, someone's focused on the morning after pill. So my question is this: why can't we in a pro-life movement you're a little leery because of the fact that more black babies are being aborted than any other demographic. So you don't want to turn off, you don't want to address that for fear of turning off your audience. Well, I say this: at the end of the day, it is a life that's lost. It is a life that has been exterminated, and you have to start at the. You have to start with the one thing that is the major issue, because I'm gonna say it, and this might stun a lot of people, but if you look at the abortion rates and what it's done to the black community, it has successfully rendered us past the point of populating ourselves. Because I think, what's the number, Connie? 2.1 is needed to keep your population grow going, and I think we're setting at 0.1%.
Yeah, it's called the replacement rate, we just don't have it. And every nation has to actually have a replacement rate. And also, what it is the proportion of abortions in as the proportion of blacks are in the population in the United States. We make up 12-13%. We're no longer the number one minority in the United States. Hispanics are. So we make up only 12-13% of the population in the United States. However, blacks make up 37% of the abortions, you know. And we need to stop walking ourselves into these abortion clinics. There's a really accurate brochure by Life Dynamics that has a little cartoon of a Ku Klux Klansman on the front cover. And the caption is, "Abortion because lynching is for amateurs."
Right.
Okay. They don't have to hang us, string us up anymore. We walk right into these abortion clinics and pay them to kill our offspring.
Right.
When the majority of abortions are done for convenience. And it is definitely black genocide. And it doesn't matter the race of the unborn baby. We don't want any unborn baby to die, and we don't want any mama to be broken in that way.
Exactly. Exactly. That's the difference, though. For me, that's the difference. People downright got upset with me, because when the whole Trayvon Martin situation broke out, I looked at it like, okay, first of all, let's wait until all the information came out. And two, why is this life any more significant than a baby? And I actually wrote that in a blog, and boy, it was a pretty blunt blog. I lost a few friends on Facebook because of it, but hey, it is what it is, because at the end of the day, it is about a life. How is it, and this was the question I asked, how is it that we could be upset about the life lost of a 17-year-old teenager when we won't even say a peep about the, I'm guessing, probably closer to 20 million black babies that have been aborted now? If you can't get upset, at the murder at conception, how can you get upset 17 years later?
Right. Whether we lose a child when the child is 17 years old or 17 weeks of pregnancy or 17 days of pregnancy, it is still a tragedy. It's a loss to humanity, and it's a loss to that mom and that daddy, that family. But you know what? Somebody once said, I don't remember who it was, but they once said that until the violence in the womb stops, the abortion violence in the womb, until that abortion violence in the womb stops, how can we expect the violence on the streets to stop?
Connie, I've never heard that, but that's like, you just like hit me in the head with a brick.
Right now. No, I don't want to do that because I don't want to hurt you either, okay?
No,
I don't know
no,
if it was Reverend Jimmy Hunter who said that. I don't really remember who said that at all, but I remember they said it.
But that's true. That's what I mean. That just like hit me in the head with a brick, because it is true.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to have this young lady call back in. Lorna, call in. And I want you guys, Michelle, Zena, and you, Connie, to talk to her and try, you know, just see what you guys could do, because in the chat room, she's firm in her conviction. So let's see what we could do to make a difference, because I know that we can do it. So,
and I think you may have already made a difference, because, again, she's willing to call in. She's willing to ask questions. If we don't have dialogue like that, we can't learn. And she might not change her mind tonight, but the seeds have been planted, and she's been informed, and I hope she watches my Alpha 21 real quick, alpha21.com real quick, and educates herself from legitimate pro-life sources. And there's a lot of black pro-life websites. Oh, my gosh, it's a wonderful thing. You know, yeah, blackgenocide.org, blackgenocide.com, too many aborted.com, abortioninthehood.com, et cetera, et cetera.
All right. Yeah, I like I use Abortion in the Hood myself. Mm-hmm. I'm going to bring her on.
Okay.
Lorna?
Yes.
How are you doing?
Before I ask a few questions, I just want to restate once again my stance, and I know I've done this plenty of times. And again, I would like to say that I'm pro-life. I hope that everybody lives a proper lifestyle properly, given opportunities that everyone else has. That's what I hope for. But at the same time, I believe in choice and freedom. But I feel as though there shouldn't be a choice to destroy, disable, well, not destroy in terms that you all might be thinking, but it shouldn't be a choice to deform or disable a person. That should never be a choice. But to destroy an embryo, in my opinion, that is a choice. That, I don't see how it's murder. I think it's outlandish when people say it's murder. And I want to state a few other things because you've all spoke about it. I used to practice the Christian religion. I no longer practice the Christian religion. No, I'm not atheist. I have converted to practice the Muslim faith. I am 21 years old. No, I have not had any abortions. No, I do not have any children. I am happily married. I do plan to have children. No, I don't know anyone in my direct immediate family or in any of my family that's had an abortion or a miscarriage. But, yeah.
What you were going to say, especially from what we were talking about in the chat room. Just kind of restate what you say, why you don't support abortion procedures as they are today.
I don't support current day abortion procedures because there isn't 100% that the embryo will be eliminated. There isn't a 100% that it won't cause birth defects in other children that will be conceived later on throughout that woman's life. And so I feel as though with those like casualties, in my opinion, that other children that may be conceived by that woman may have an effect because of that abortion, or that embryo may develop with deformities or disabilities. I feel that alone.
Yeah.
Okay.
Let me clarify for our audience.
Let me clarify for our audience really quick what you're saying, because we talked about this on the chat room. What you're saying is that you disagree with abortion procedures that don't 100% kill the unborn. If there's a chance that somebody could survive, that is why you don't support it. Is that correct?
If there's a chance that the embryo can go full term, then I don't support it, right?
You mean go full term and be damaged.
Right. What you're saying,
or the mom be damaged.
Unless an abortion can successfully kill 100% of all its victims, and I'll use that word again, you don't support it. And you would support abortion if they can guarantee the death of each and every child in the womb.
And also you're
when
saying
I,
that...
Just to clarify, because I really don't like the way in which you're, like, stating it, but just to clarify what you're saying, if I go to an abortion clinic and I want to get an abortion, if they can't get rid of that embryo all entirely, that embryo, then I'm not going to get it. No one should be able to go and partially destroy someone's life.
So
that's
you're like a box divorce. You're talking like a
okay,
box divorce.
Someone's life. No, you
but
just
the, okay,
life.
But,
Hold on,
Leticia, hold on. Go ahead, Connie, go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just trying to clarify, too. So you're talking about if it's a possibility that it's going to be a botched abortion, then you don't think anybody should be able to get an abortion until it can be done without being botched. Is that right?
Exactly.
Okay. But then you're,
and without,
you're focusing
and also, but, sorry, not to cut you off, but also include, like, further defects, like, say, the next child that you give birth to, as long as they're not affected from the last abortion. Yes,
and,
that's how
and
I
And that's
feel.
A legitimate point because there are some situations where because a woman has had an abortion, she might have scar tissue, she could have future miscarriages, or be sterile and never have another child at all. And then your
exactly.
focus also on the embryo. You've seen your focus on the very early stages of the baby's development. And you're very concerned about that and that maybe you're accepting abortion at that time. Now, have you considered what is unique about one embryo? Like when that one sperm and that one egg unite, or is that like any other egg and any other sperm that would unite? Are they all the same or is each individual that's created different from each other genetically?
Honestly, and this is my opinion, okay, because we can get into all that, but I feel like it's unnecessary. I understand the point you're trying to get across, and what I'm going to say is my thing is for the people who procreate, the mother and the father of those gametes, the person in charge of the sperm, the person in charge of the egg, for him to be able to pull out and to put his sperm anywhere else, like on a wall, on the sheets, where have you, that's a form of abortion, in my opinion. That's a good choice for him. And for her...
Now, let's concede because the sperm only has half of what's needed, and the egg only has half of what's needed, so individually they are not human beings, but when they unite, they make one, as you know, scientifically, not even on opinion, scientifically, one genetically unique individual
understood.
That will never be repeated again.
Understood, but
yeah.
what I'm talking about
yeah.
is my point on choice.
Yeah.
My
yeah.
point
I
on
got,
choice is he... I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Are you still talking?
Yes, yeah,
okay.
there.
My point on choice is a man has the choice to put the sperm in a woman, whereas a woman doesn't have the choice to take her egg out for that moment she's about to have sex. So for her to be able to get a day after pill, I want that pill, that option, to be fully successful. I feel as though women should have the same ability to choose whether or not they want to reproduce. Because
well, there is natural family planning in which women don't have to be chemicalized, shot, or nothing inserted in them. There's natural family planning because supposedly, and I'm not a medical professional, it's only 3 days a month where you can get pregnant. So that may be something to look into is natural family planning where your mucus changes in your body, and then there are certain days when temperature rises and falls, and there's all kinds of ways to tell when you're fertile and when you're not. And that way, you know, that, and that also helps a wife and a husband. Remember I said a married wife and husband become closer in their relationship. So, you know, may want to look at that because,
but,
you know, as a,
like,
you
and
know,
again,
that kind of thing.
We're not talking about me and we're not talking about you. We're talking about people who get abortions. We're talking about people who have had abortions. And
Lorna,
like as heavy
Lorna.
As you guys are with this, but yeah.
Lorna, hold on for a minute. Let me, I need to deal with a fallacy, first of all. And that's the fallacy of choice. There for the pro-choice movement, there is no such thing as choice. Case in point, the young lady who is starting the inner city Rachel House Crisis Pregnancy Center here in Kansas City a couple months ago shared her testimony how when she was on the abortion table, before the procedure was started, she changed her mind. They lied to her and told her they already started the procedure. They would not let her get up. They would not let her leave. So this is the thing that really bothers me with the whole argument for choice, when the truth of the matter is that 99% of the time, no other choice other than abortion is given. When Planned Parenthood, when they aborted something like over 300 and something thousand abortions or babies last year, and they only referred something like 300 babies.
Can I respond to that real quick?
No, hold on. No, because there's no response for this.
Well,
there is no,
I have an
there
opinion
is,
on that. With a few facts that could clear things up.
There is not. You're right.
Again,
you
I just
want to
just put this out here. Would you consider that a botched job, or would you say that was a professional, well done abortion?
She did not want the abortion. She
changed
her mind.
So it was a botched job.
Before
it was a botched job. That's what you're saying, right?
No.
That was medical malpractice, because never, and it is a law in HIPAA that you do not ever go against the consent of the patient.
Well,
that's in HIPAA.
Keep in mind that the abortion industry.
So that clinic or that hospital, that place that she went to, that was a botched job. She has the right to sue. She was wrongfully done.
Lorna, no, she doesn't.
That's not.
Hold on.
That doesn't help your argument
Lorna, hold on. First of all, abortion clinics aren't regulated by the medical industry because they're protected. Abortion clinics are not regulated.
That's not true. Every doctor has a sworn oath, okay?
No, they have one, but they don't keep it. Look up Dr. Gosnell in Pennsylvania.
And if they don't keep it, you know what happens to them? They lose their license.
Not soon enough. How come the clinics in Pennsylvania were not even inspected for 17 years? Gosnell took the dead babies' bodies and put them in the refrigerator, and they were playing around with dead babies.
With that case, because I live in Pennsylvania, I live in Upper Darby, Pennsylvania, and I'm well aware of a lot of the medical situations. And the one in which you're talking about, I think you're talking about the doctor was given abortions, and I forget exactly what happened, but even still, they took all their records, even though the records weren't kept well, they took all their records, the doctor and his nurses and his assistants, all of them, were taken into court. They all are facing felony charges.
He's in
finally,
he's,
but
yeah,
after
felony
all,
charges for murder.
Like trash.
But listen, again, the choice, and that's what I'm talking about. I'm against abortion, right? Currently, I'm against abortion until the choice is only for a successful, not botched job. And you guys are speaking on botched jobs, under-the-table jobs, things done low-key, sneaky, things like that. No, I'm talking about professional medical practice.
Okay, let me say something?
Hold on. Go ahead, Connor. Letitia, hold on for a minute. Go ahead.
Legal abortion means that there is no such thing as a regulated abortion clinic, such that the federal government dictates to the abortionist what kind of procedures he can and cannot use. So we're not
talking about all abortions. Talk about facts. If you're not going to talk about facts, then I'm going to just end the conversation.
Can I say something?
Hold on.
May I say something, please?
Go ahead.
Okay, Zena.
Is this Zena or who?
Yeah, that's Zena.
Okay, I wanted to address Lorna real quick, if she doesn't mind. A couple of things. The first is, there's two things you mentioned that I wanted to address just real briefly. And one is, no matter what you do, whether it's abortion, whether it's driving a car, what, no matter what you do in life, there is nothing 100% at all in life. So you can look at any situation, you can look at any medical procedure, you can look at anything. There is nothing that is 100%. So that's the first thing, because you were saying you were saying. The second thing I wanted to address is when you were talking about the man withdrawing, because he has a choice. If you have studied biology or have studied sexual reproduction, you will understand. You will understand that once a man enters a woman, that there's always seepage. So whether or not he withdraws, there is always seepage, and there's only one sperm that needs to fertilize an egg. That's
yep.
it. And even if he withdraws, there are still several hundred thousand, maybe millions of sperm that has already entered the woman and has already started moving up the reproductive tract of the woman where she can still become pregnant. So I just wanted to address those two things, and those are two things that you can actually research for yourself if you haven't done so already.
Well, and then can I just respond to her statements real quick?
Go ahead.
Thanks, because I don't want to ignore you and be rude. But, yes, okay, I understand sexual relations, okay? I'm 21, and as far as the reproductive organs work with a man, seepage, as you said, there are so many different bacteria and chemicals down there that are biological, and we all know for a female, her urethra is used for two things. That's to urinate and to – no, she urinates through her urethra. There's acid in a female's vagina, okay? For a man, there's acid from the urine, and then there's also the semen that comes through. For the seepage, that tiny little bit of pre-cum that you say, oops, it slipped in. All right, for that tiny amount of pre-cum or whatever, if he pulls out and he's seriously pulled out, that little seepage that you're talking about really has no effect whatsoever. What you're thinking about are those people who sit there not realizing, they're coming and pre-coming into the girl and then pulls out halfway through their cum. So, honestly, I think this conversation is over, for real. There's no facts being said.
Lorna, you're right. There isn't no
fact. It's not even about being right. It's just
Lorna, hold on. Here's the thing. We presented facts that you don't like.
Those aren't facts. What are you talking about?
But Lorna, they
facts?
Actually
tell me one fact
they
you told me.
They are they okay. What facts have we
tell
told?
Me one fact.
One fact one. Abortion is the number one killer of black people in the black community.
False. That's not a fact.
It is a fact.
Woo! Okay.
It's not
Lorna.
A fact.
Lorna.
But you know what? This conversation is over. I'm sorry I called in. I forgot how crazy you guys are on this radio show. Bye.
Okay. Bye. See ya.
Let's finish up. The numbers do not lie.
Interesting.
When we talk about how many black children have been killed over the course of legalized abortion, they outnumber all the other natural forms of death in the black community 2-1.
Yep.
Can I make one point? This is Michelle.
Go ahead, Michelle.
Sorry. Just to address her question of choice, because I think that was probably the one question that would affect most listeners. The man doesn't have a choice under the law. I mean, under the law, he can be held responsible and have to pay money and help financially in another way if he impregnates someone. Now, they may try to run away and avoid it, but under the law, he is accountable to that child in a way that the woman is not. And also, he has no choice if the woman has the abortion or not. So
that's another good point.
I think that there's this idea that we're trying to equalize ourselves with men, but we're actually giving ourselves choices that the men don't have. And to me, as a woman, that bothers me because it's like saying we are not as responsible and able to be held accountable as we hold men. And I think that puts women in an unequal position to men. But anyway, that's my soapbox.
No, you're absolutely right on. Connie, Zena, what do you guys have to add to that?
Well, I just want to say I'm really glad Lorna did chime in, and
yeah.
I believe that if she takes the time that she will, you know, I think she'll take the time to do some research because, you know, she's a very intelligent young woman, and I think that she's, just like all of us, really need to learn a little bit more. So,
right.
And I think once she does the more, you know, more research, you might hear from her again, you know, confirming that she has done the research. Because it's one thing to get all upset about people not believing what your opinion is, but
right.
It's another thing to actually know what the facts really state.
Right. Exactly.
What was stated here today can be researched in legitimate places,
exactly.
Like the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, or at Guttmacher's Institute, or you know,
yep.
Different biological places that you know, biology books can prove everything that we have been saying. No matter how eloquent it's been said, but whatever it said, if it can be proven, then it can be proven. Then if it cannot, then it cannot. And I think that the young lady, Lorna, will be a lot wiser in the future by doing a little bit more research, just like the rest of us will as well.
Right, exactly. And the thing of it is, you know, we can't get to a place where we're not teachable, or we can't, you know, or we can't be shown something that's wrong or stuff like that. Because, well, I've been researching this topic since 2006. It wasn't until, actually, I started doing this show that I really started learning more. Letitia, you know, she does a lot of research. Melissa, with 40 days or 40 days of life
mm-hmm.
in North Carolina, who she works with, they do a lot of research. I do a lot of research and stuff like that. I also observe. I also have my own personal story when it pertains to abortion. And come to find out again, and the plot thickens, I may have been talking to my mom. I may have been an actual ectopic pregnancy. Because I spent the last few weeks talking to my mom, trying to just get to the bottom of why they were targeting me for abortion, and they told her that that's what I was. I was in her fallopian tube. Well, my question is this: how did I survive so long in her fallopian tube? If you know, and then our guest last week, Mr. Bill Fortenberry, actually said, you know, there have been documented cases of babies surviving ectopic pregnancies. So that's something that I have to research to find out if that's what happened to me, you know, because it's
yeah.
crazy. It's, but I want to learn. And that's what it boils down to.
Yeah.
Right. And the key is learning the facts and not learning what we want to learn just for our own personal benefit.
Right.
So.
And maybe there's a factor of fear as well, whatever that fear may be.
Right.
If we learn it may change us. Even it will change us for the better, but there may be that fear or, you know, I don't know. But you know what? We'll just pray that all the listeners come to know the love and light of Christ. And when we come to Christ, we stop being the walking dead and we come to life. And he does teach us, like you said. He gives us hearts willing to learn, and we learn, and he's just too good to us.
Right. I'm excited about these kind of dialogues because it does teach me. I can't speak for anybody else, But I, Connie, every time I talk to you, I learn something new. Even if it's on Facebook and we're chatting about what you're doing at your job, you know, I learn something. I learn something new every time, you know.
Well, you're too kind. I was telling Zena that all three of you, Melissa, Letitia, and Thomas, y'all scare me because you're very, very knowledgeable. You guys have got it down pat. You are serious, and I just love your show. I love what you do as a team. I'm scared, y'all.
And you know what? She made me scared, too, by telling me all of that.
Is that what it was?
That's why you got kind of stage fright. No.
Oh, yeah. Actually, I was telling her, no, I don't want to say anything. So.
Letitia,
yeah, we're all learning. We're trying to learn these issues and so that we can defend them and being as active as we can in the movement and you know, it's,
right.
Yeah, we're learning from you guys. What are you talking about? That's why we have you guys coming on the show so that we can learn from you.
Wow.
So Zena and I, we're actually at a convention and we have to get going, but I do want to close by saying that Zena and I are very grassrootsy pro-lifers, and we have actually been selected as she's an alternate, and I am a delegate to the Republican convention to represent pro-lifers.
I'll be in. Okay.
Yay!
So we'll be going to the national convention
awesome.
To represent pro-lifers and grassroots. It can be done, people, and you must raise your voice to save lives.
So you know what, Connie? When you get your FDF membership, you'll be able to be representing not only your organization, but FDF. You go, girl.
That's right. Woo.
Frederick Douglass Foundation. That's awesome
what you guys are doing out there. You know,
that is cool.
Representing the movement and getting people active in this political process so that we can make some changes in Congress that need to desperately be made.
Definitely. From the White House to the outhouse, like they say.
Yep.
Absolutely. To the church house, right?
There you go.
Definitely to the church house. But are we going to hang on?
So,
yeah.
Thank you. I apologize. We got to go.
Thank you so much for having us on.
Thank you so much for joining us on the air.
All right.
Thank y'all, ladies. God bless you for all that you do.
Thank you. God bless you all. Bye-bye.
Take care.
All right.
Bye-bye. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Man, they are really, really awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Let's see. So, about the gender selection, take it away, Miss Letitia.
Oh, you know what? My monologue was the beginning. It was about Ron Paul. But we can talk about the gender selection, which happened. I mean, that's the Prenda bill, specifically in Congress, the Prenda bill that was defeated. In wider perspective, the sex selection issue has come up to the forefront with the whole Chen Guangchen issue having been just persecuted almost to the point of death in China. And our State Department and the Obama administration for never giving him a break in this. In fact, literally just tossing him out into the open, back into the hands of the wolves. And they have kind of been forced since then to bring him to the United States. They haven't given him asylum, though. So he is not safe, even though he has come to the United States on a student visa. What's that worth? It's probably is only as good as the Chinese government says it's good for. If they decide that they want him to go back to China and face charges and persecute him some more, our government has not given him protection to keep that from happening. So the sex selection, the forced abortion and the sex-based abortion in China, you know, hit the news along with Chen Guangchen. And also the admission by Planned Parenthood that they actively endorse sex-selective abortion, and how on Monday and Tuesday, it hit the news that we have tapes from live action showing Planned Parenthood counselors giving advice to women who are seeking sex selection abortions on how to do it, how to do late-term abortions, how to use Medicaid funds to obtain ultrasounds in order to find out the sex of their child, and if it happens to be the wrong sex, and let me say this really plainly, if the child happens to have the wrong set of chromosomes, actually one wrong chromosome, that child can legally be killed, and Planned Parenthood admits to supporting this. And now we have the Prenda bill being defeated. We are supporting here in the United States gendercide. This admission of guilt will lead to gendercide, because as we adopt a lot of the practices in other countries, saying that we can have preferences for gender, we can have preferences for either boys or girls, this isn't anything new, actually. It's just now come to the forefront. I have at least two stories on my blog about what if America decided to approve of gender-based or sex-selective abortion. And what if has now become what now? Because it is right here in front of us. It is something that we have to deal with. And, you know, this is one of those things that people had used to say, oh, don't be ridiculous. We'll never have that. No, we don't have that type of value. Oh, gender-based abortion is just totally, totally foreign to us. It's not foreign to us. And what we said, you know, 10 years ago when people said it's coming and people said, oh, it's ridiculous. Oh, don't be crazy. It's right here. It's in front of our nose, and our Congress, our dear Congress, and our dear Democrats voted it down. Now, are Republicans not at fault either? Some Republicans supported this bill. Some Republicans didn't. And at the end of the day, enough Republicans, the Republicans in the House who set up the bill, they set it up to be defeated by requiring a two-thirds majority, didn't help things either.
Letitia, let me actually stop you right there, because I did some research on that. If that bill would have been brought up the regular way, it wouldn't have been able to be brought up again until the next congressional session. But because it was being brought up requiring a two-thirds majority and the fact that it didn't pass, that bill can be reintroduced at any time in this congressional session. What a lot of people don't realize in this, and I caught this today, is that that was actually a strategic move, because if that bill would have been brought up the regular way, under the regular House rule, it would not have been able, and just say it would have failed. It would have not been able to be brought up again this legislative term. But because it was done the way it was did, that bill could be reintroduced on Monday.
I appreciate that, Thomas, and it's really nice that they thought of that. The problem is, it's June 1st.
Right.
The congressional legislative session is going to end pretty soon. So
yep.
Even if they do bring it back on Monday, it's not going to be long. Their session's going to be over.
I agree. I totally, totally agree.
So I'm not sure that that wasn't just kind of their lame attempt.
Well, you know.
Trying to defeat it.
Right. Yeah, it is pretty sad. It is pretty sad. Michelle, Melissa, what you guys think about this bill?
I've been in the zone. You know, some things are just you don't believe until they happen, and I knew that we were headed that direction, but for it to be a reality. For the United States to be the only developed country to have no regulation whatsoever on sex selection abortions is preposterous for no other reason. Even if they would, the argument I've been hearing is this wouldn't save any lives. And first of all, there's no proof that that's the case. I mean, how can you say that it wouldn't save any lives? You'd have to be omniscient to make such a declaration like that. And we do know that abortion regulations do work. They have helped to decrease abortions. So any type of regulation that we can have, it's going to help, you know, in some way. And just from the perspective of just our national dignity as a Western nation, as a developed nation, for us to vote down a ban like this, it speaks volumes to the world and to us as citizens of this country. I'm ashamed that this happened. I don't know how to make sense of it. I'm saddened by it. I'm angered by it. But at the same time, I feel more boldness to even defend the pro-life position even more through this blatant disregard for human life, for the life of little girls.
Right.
So I'm just overwhelmed with a lot of different emotions surrounding this vote because there's so many different factors, you know.
Right. And, you know, they figure that if no one is reproducing, they could keep the population down to their 500 million. Like, the Agenda 21's population control is to get the world's population down from 7 billion to 500 million. How do you think that's going to happen? A lot of killing.
Yeah.
And I think that's part, take it away. I got to deal with the issue real quick.
So I think the way that the sex selective abortion has come to be in the forefront right now, it just kind of compels us to talk about it. Now, I mean, we're going to try to get guests on who are closer to this issue. Now that it's hit the airwaves, it's been hard to get some of the more popular guests on our show. We would like to have Lila Rose on. We would love to have somebody from the ACLJ on. And we probably will get them on the air to talk about this issue. What's really important to note about this is that there are people that are coming to this country from other countries like China who have immigrated here that are practicing sex-selective abortion. I mean, just because you leave your country of origin doesn't mean you stop practicing the type of values. Now, if
right.
they are pro-death values like killing female children before they're born, those are values that I would like them to quickly shed in favor of valuing the children you have instead of valuing the children you prefer to have. In terms of this legislation, I know that there's discussion which, you know, we can get into how effective would this kind of legislation on the federal level be. I have said before on Facebook that it's going to be very difficult, if not impossible, to enforce a law that bans sex-selective abortion. But that being said, our country, because abortion is a federal issue, the federal government needs to have a law that addresses that practice and lays down penalties for people participating in sex-selective abortion.
Right.
So it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter if if it has enough teeth by itself to be enforced. The fact that our legislators don't have enough guts to stand up for it in principle tells us we're not in a good position to fight sexual
Right.
On a governmental level.
Hold up. Did Greg call back in? Okay. Greg, I'm not seeing your call when you call in. So
let me tell you that in India, everything that India is known for as far as sex selective abortion is illegal. Hmm. It's illegal to try to obtain an ultrasound for the purpose of determining the sex of the child. Are they doing it? Yes. It's illegal to abort a child based on the gender of the child, but they're doing it.
Right. Yeah, and I was confused too because the PRENTA Act is specifically, the bill was a non-discrimination bill, so it was to prevent the discrimination of aborted potential abortees based on their gender. And if that is the criteria upon which they are being aborted, I fail to understand how that did not qualify as an act of discrimination. And since discrimination is something that our government does, they are to fight discrimination in order to give all equal rights. And in terms of this right to life, if females are specifically being singled out just based on their gender alone, I'm not sure how that doesn't qualify under discrimination infraction.
It should. That's my opinion.
I think so, too. I think that's clear.
We are dealing with abortion, though, and somehow everybody thinks abortion is in a separate category.
Right.
Right, exactly.
Well, folks, get ready to close this out. And, Greg, I apologize because I was in the chat or in the room looking for your phone call and I didn't see any other I didn't see a call light up, so maybe it's my computer, but I apologize for that because I don't screen any, or I don't not take anyone's call, so, and you should know me, we have our disagreements and knock out, drag out fights, but I still love you to pieces and nothing was done deliberate, and I apologize for that. Folks, we want to thank you all for joining us today on Pro-Life Fridays. Thank our guest, Michelle. Awesome young lady, Letitia, Melissa, Connie, Zena. And until next time, I'll let my two awesome co-hosts have last words.
All right. Good night, everybody. Thanks for
joining us. Night. Thank you all so much for joining us and for sharing your time with us this evening.
And join us next week. Thanks a lot.
Good night.
God bless.
Good night.
Hello?
I wonder how it must have felt. out of reach of your day. You were always there. You were always there. For Mary stood upon that hill. Abraham with a knife in hand was poised to kill. God in all his sovereignty had bigger plans, and just in time, you brought a lamb. You were there, in the midst of the unclear. You were there, not make sense. Oh, you were there. You were always there. You were always there. Oh, so haven't I learned that my ways aren't as high as yours are? And you alone dark. Every moment, every plan, coincidence, just don't make sense with your last breath. During history's darkest hour,